We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Mully and Hall, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
If today goes well, and so far, you know, he's taking Cage and ground balls, and now we're getting ready to go on the road, but he's in there. We got him a little left-hander that's trying to make the team, a guy named Bummer, that he's swinging at. And the two swings he took, I walked away quickly because what Bummer was throwing, there's nobody going to look good. If it all goes well, he said before the practice started that, and James agreed, that we can ride him in tomorrow.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Well, what do you know? Jose Abreu back in camp, the MVP, ready to play, and he may play today. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. And when you're up against Bummer, it's turn around and walk away.
A guy named Bummer. you can only hope that sinker was working. And is that good news or bad news? I mean, obviously, Aaron Bummer is a guy whose stuff is nasty, and when he's on, he's on. And I guess with Jose Abreu, you expect a little bit of an adjustment phase. He just got to camp on Saturday, for goodness sakes. But sounds like he's going to be written into the lineup today. And Mully, I don't know if you saw this, but as an aside, when the Sox write these guys into the lineup, it's with exquisite penmanship.
Beautiful.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, that's your. What's his name? If you Google who's the catcher, the catcher coach, he's the guy with the calligraphy. And if you Google what's his name? Who's the guy they just hired as their Jerry Nalen?
Jerry Nairn.
Jerry Nairn. I'm sorry. Yeah. If you Google Nairn and calligraphy, you will see an example of his writing. Absolutely beautiful. Apparently, on one of his early stops, he understood the importance of really being able to put a lineup together that everybody could read, and he was taught that. So he took his sister's calligraphy; she had a book on it, and he practiced. And now he does the lineup, and it is. I mean, you wouldn't get a wedding invitation this beautiful. It's absolutely extraordinary.
It's artwork, and if they wanted to just say that they hired Jerry Nairn just for his calligraphy, I think it would be okay.
Yes.
Based on how good it is,
it's
right?
That good. You're absolutely
it's that
right.
Good.
But there's been stories written about it. It's so good. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic to see. It's funny to see Abreu there because I don't know if you caught any of the game yesterday, David, and I didn't see this when I tuned in because they were going from game to game, but on my Twitter feed it showed, and I want to give credit. I think it was Chuck Garfine. So if you want to check his Twitter, you'll see it. Abreu is apparently friends with Pujols now. I didn't realize this. Pujols comes out of the dugout, runs over, grabs Tony La Russa, gives him like this bear hug, lifts him off the ground. And I'm thinking to myself, like, well, wait a minute. Didn't he? I mean, I know the St. Louis connection, but wasn't he in the front office a year? Like, how, when's the last time he hugged him? It's not like he hasn't seen him in 15 years, but Pujols loves him, loves Tony, lifted him off the ground. And apparently, he, Abreu, had called Pujols looking for a scouting report and got the, you know, like the highest recommendation known to man. And then right before the start of the season, he got a phone call from Pujols like, hey, have you met Tony? Call me back when you meet him. Let me know what your thoughts are. And Abreu said, because he told him, just the greatest man ever. You're going to love him. He's great as a manager. He's great as a human. And Abreu said, he's right. So the love fest is just going. It's let's have big hugs and lift a guy up. I don't want to damage him, but there's a lot of love there. Pujols and Abreu being this year's Pujols for Tony.
And Pujols spent, 11 years with La Russa in St. Louis with the Cardinals. So he's as qualified of a source on this as you could imagine. And he and Abreu have a lot in common statistically and otherwise. So it makes
MVPs,
a lot of sense.
Both MVPs.
Yes, now they are both MVPs. And they are both, I think they were there's only one other player. Was it Joe DiMaggio? The three players who have started their major league careers with 4 years of 25 or more homers and 100 or more RBIs, and it's Abreu, it's Pujols, and I think it's Joe DiMaggio. So that's very good company to keep, and you would seek guys like that. And I think there are a lot of people wondering what the Sox were getting themselves when they hired 76-year-old Tony La Russa. And I think it's interesting to, and you alluded to this earlier, when you hear Tony La Russa describe players and his impressions of these guys, that's going to be a while before that novelty wears off. It just is. It's kind of authentic, it's deliberate, and it's the fresh eyes, and we're hearing new impressions, and it's very, very compelling to hear him describe things from Jose Abreu in the batting cage to whatever young reliever he passes during a bullpen session.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Tony's thus far has been kind of fun. It's been good to hear that. I know a lot of people are still complaining about the cadence, and when we talked to him, we got a bunch of people texting in and complaining about the way he was talking. But if you listen to what he was saying, I loved getting a chance to catch up with him, and I thought he made a lot of really interesting points, not the least of which was about that bullpen. And, you know, we look at the White Sox and we think about their pitching staff now, and we think about how they're going to put it together. And, you know, there's a lot of teams out there that don't have a known starting rotation. You know, we can argue about the fifth starter, but there are a lot of teams that are in the same boat. Having those three guys to line up 1, 2, 3, and then, you know, who knows? Every time we talk to anyone, and I can't wait to talk to Chris Getz if we ever get there, about his guy Dylan Cease. He picked Dylan Cease as his breakthrough player a couple of years running, and we're still waiting for that. I think that if Dylan Cease has that breakthrough this year, now all of a sudden you got four, not three, and now you got as good a rotation as you're going to find. I mean, it's hard. You look around the American League, not a lot of teams are coming in with those three starters, and you know the Sox may have a couple more. Who knows?
Well, that's what we're basing the hope on, and the season is being projected on the strength of the starting pitching, and it starts with Giolito and Keuchel and Lance Lynn. They got Lance Lynn for a reason, and this is a guy, another one, who knows what it's like to play for Tony La Russa. He was a rookie on that team in 2011, so he understands what it's like to go through a year with him. He's not a guy that Tony La Russa is going to have a first impression on to share, because he knows his first impression was as a hard-throwing rookie. So the Sox, the things at the end of the rotation and the things kind of holes in the bullpen, if you have some of those, you know, the last couple guys to make the team, we're going to talk about them. We're going to examine them. We're going to scrutinize, because that's what we do. That's part of evaluating and examining a baseball team. But when you look at the things that you have to have to be considered a contender, boy, the Sox have to feel good about their first three starters. They have to feel good about the back end of their bullpen, and they have to feel good about their everyday lineup. Those are the things that give you hope. And then the rest of the stuff is, you know, I think falls under the category of quality depth and the little things that you need to win a championship. And those things will eventually, you know, reveal themselves and take care of themselves.
Yeah, no shadow of a doubt. And I got to tell you, it was kind of fun just to see Joe Maddon yesterday. I don't know how much of the game you watched, but at one point they showed him on the sidelines, and I'm trying to do it here with my hat, and he had a pen that was like hanging out of his hat. It was like he had like notes here. He didn't have it in his ear because he was wearing a mask. He just shoved it under his cap, and he was pulling it out and doing his little notes thing. He was mentioned in a story. Jason Stark did a story about
Mike
Trout.
It's a good look. It's a good look.
It is. It's perfect. It's hysterical. He did a story Stark did about Joe Maddon, about Mike Trout, talked to Joe Maddon, and this is what Joe Maddon had to say about Mike Trout. He said, "Don't get in the way of greatness. I think there's been too much restriction and too much front office interface in baseball." He means interference. He used the word interface, which is polite. There's been too much stuff coming from the top to the field, and that gets in the way of greatness. You know, it just makes you, when you hear Joe say something like that, when you read a quote like that, it makes you wonder, where did Joe get that idea? How did Joe put together his too much from the top to the bottom stuff that's going on?
Yeah, here we are.
Was that from Tampa?
Here we are relitigating 2019, but you're right. That's the idea that was espoused at the end of the Joe Maddon era in Chicago. Would it have lasted longer if there was a little less interface, polite word, interface from the front office? That is today's you know, front office experience. That is the reality in every major league organization. But when the Angels hired Joe Maddon, they knew what they were getting. So he is, you know, I think he's probably one of those managers that is the front office probably leaves alone or is given the benefit of the doubt, a little bit more autonomy or independence based on his career. Wouldn't you think that that's going to be the case in Anaheim with Joe?
I think the reason that it was so fascinating to me is you're absolutely right. It's all over the place in baseball. I don't think it's the case for Joe in Anaheim, and that's probably why the job appeals to him. I don't think it's the case for Tony La Russa in Chicago, because I believe that the only guy that's allowed to talk to him is the owner, and that's only through conversations of friendship. I don't think he's being told, we got to start this guy, we got to do this, we got to move this guy in the lineup. I wonder what your thoughts are now that Theo is gone and Jed Hoyer is the president of basketball or baseball operations. I wonder what your thoughts are about whether that's happening with David Ross.
I don't think there's a baseball executive that I have ever covered that I have any more respect for than Theo Epstein. And I don't think I'm alone in making that comment. I think he's universally respected and praised. But I do think him stepping aside is significant this offseason heading into this year because of what the dynamics change. And when you have somebody who is as respected and revered and almost, you know, this is like a larger than life figure in every meeting room at times. I wonder if there were, I don't know. I mean, maybe removing Theo from the equation streamlines things between the manager and the front office or changes the context with which that kind of information is processed. Does it make it simpler? I think it could probably. I mean, you know, Theo probably cast a pretty large shadow over every conversation he had, over everything that happened with the Cubs. And for a long time, that was a very positive thing. Not to say that it wasn't last year. They won the division, for goodness sakes. But do you know what I mean?
I couldn't agree with you more. I think, I would go so far as to say that I think Theo Epstein, of all the executives in every sport that I've ever covered, he's a guy who commands respect just by being there, the things he says. And I don't know anybody else and I can't think of even another sport where a guy would hold that kind of gravitas. You know, maybe Belichick, if we'd ever dealt with a guy like that, who, you know, probably carries himself similarly. But again, he's not giving instructions to another so much as kind of running his operation as CEO. But I think Theo might stand alone in that. Now, does that mean that Jed Hoyer is not now the guy that has moved into the interfacing with David Ross? I would hope It doesn't. I would hope there still is that relationship. I think that that's one of the reasons that Ross was hired, because of the good communication he had with the front office, be it Theo or Jed. So I would doubt that that has ended completely in any fashion. And I don't want it to. But I do think that while the relationship is developing with Kenny and Rick Hahn and Tony La Russa, I would be stunned to find out that they're telling him how to fill up a lineup card, or they're actually telling him how to tell Jerry Nairn how to fill out a lineup card.
You don't tell Jerry Nairn how. He's going to tell you exactly how it's going to look. He's not going to pick the names, but he's only going to choose how they look on the lineup card. It's going to be fascinating to follow, because I do think the dynamic is different on the north side with Rossi in the front office, and maybe they're more open to trying different things because they're not afraid of letting down the baseball emperor that Theo Epstein sort of became with the Cubs. And with the White Sox, the observational analytics that Tony La Russa talked about, he sounds very open-minded. We'll find out just, how open-minded he might be and how willing people are to exchange ideas with a guy who is a three-time World Series champion and already in the Hall of Fame. That's going to be fascinating to follow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about it that way. I mean, even if you have like a really good idea, we got to do this. Are you going to tell to call Jerry? Jerry can call. Hey, by the way, the guys are saying. And right. I know we're just having fun with it, but I think you're right. I think it's, when you have the kind of profile a 76-year-old manager in Tony La Russa has, with his three titles and his Hall of Fame ring, I don't know how comfortable you feel telling him what you think. So that will be an emerging story, I suppose.
We got to get to KC, but one last thought on that. We'll get back to it. Like an example. Who's going to talk to Tony La Russa about maybe suggesting that in days that Tim Anderson doesn't play, that leading off Yasmani Grandal might be a good idea just based on the metrics and based on some of the numbers? It's a conversation we've had in the past about Grandal leading off, but do you think Tony La Russa looks at his catcher and thinks, I wonder about the day I'm going to lead him off? Probably not, right?
Louis Robert led off yesterday and looked pretty damn good to me. I don't know. Maybe they got a few options on that front. But you're right. I think that's an awful good one. All right, we'll get to KC next. We're going to bring him in. We're going to talk about the Bulls and the big loss, and really about AK and the big Zoom as well. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
Bernstein and Rahimi, middays 9 a.m. to noon on the Score.
When it comes to Tony La Russa, it's unfortunately for talk radio people, I think it's going to be a very time will tell type of thing. Talk to me in the eighth inning when the game is on the line. How many pitching changes are you going
to
make?
Yeah, talk to me after they lost 3 in a row and they're down 6-1 and Tim Anderson flips his bat.
Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago sports station.
Banks it in!
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Stop it!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh, my goodness. Did you not get the memo?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend KC Johnson from, of course, NBC Sports Chicago. And the Score Hotline is presented by Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or APFord.com. KC, good morning. How are you?
Morning, KC.
What's up, guys? How you doing? Happy to be twitching with you again this morning.
Yeah, how fun is this? You look very salubrious, as always. And I guess when I managed to get on the Zoom call with AK and just sit in the background and eavesdrop. I don't know if David was there. I think you were too, right? I was surprised at how much Joakim Noah talk there was. And I get it that Joe had officially retired, even though he seemed like he had already retired. But, I just wanted to give him a second here, because I loved that guy, and I thought he broke his rear end. And I like the idea of him coming back and being a Bull for a day so he can officially retire. And I just was amused at how that somehow took on a life of its own.
Yeah, I mean, we've got 15 minutes with the executive for the first time since training camp. And, you know, I mean, Arturis obviously is going to do what the Reinsdorfs want and in honoring Joe. I mean, he has no ties to Joe other than obviously recognizing what he meant to this franchise. You know, Billy Donovan was asking about him pregame. That tie is probably a little bit more transparent, obviously, because of the Florida connection. But you guys know how I feel about Joe. I rarely peel back the curtain on individual dealings with athletes. However, when this news first broke in December, this was headed this direction. I posted a column at NBCSportsChicago.com kind of revealing one personal encounter that I had with Joakim of many over the several years I covered him. And I've always said covering him was my privilege because he was the perfect combination of worldliness and honesty and humor and passion. And when you guys know, as a beat writer, that's just like the dream combination. So I feel fortunate that I was able to cover Joakim. He made my job a heck of a lot easier.
Well put. And Casey, you alluded to Arturis having 15 minutes to spend with the media. I thought it was interesting. And your analysis on NBCSportsChicago.com was right. You took away four things that he said that you interpreted. The two that I think were most significant to me were, number one, what he said about the trade deadline and how there might not be as many sellers just because of the new playoff format. And secondly, how Lauri Markkanen he speaks in positive terms about, even though he has not been available as much as the Bulls might have liked, did it inform you at all about what to expect about his future?
Okay, so we'll start with the trade deadline, David. And what I would say is that the amazing thing about AK, and you guys know, having had him on your airwaves and also, you know, just listening to him a few times he's talked, is he is so expert at kind of just giving you something without obviously showing his full hand that the tea leaf reading can go completely different ways. So, for instance, your fine sports editor at 670 thescore.com, Cody Westerlund, who I usually am spot on in agreement with, completely read his comment about the trade deadline differently than I did. And I think that, you know, either read is probably accurate. The way Cody read it is, since there are so few sellers, this could be an opportunity for the Bulls. And Arturis is somebody who obviously sees opportunity. I personally read it as a guy who realizes there's going to be very few sellers and is going to kind of use this season to evaluate what he has, especially if they get whole, and go for a playoff run. And obviously keeping Thad Young would be critical to that. So we'll see how it plays out. Obviously, also, unforeseen things can happen between now and the March 25th trade deadline. I mean, an incredible offer for Thad Young might come along that might change AK's thinking. So we'll see how that plays out. But he definitely leaves a lot of wiggle room for tea leaf reading, including with Lowry, because even while, and I agree with you, he's been incredibly complimentary of Lauri Markkanen all the way dating back to preseason, which is why I personally thought there was optimism for reaching a contract extension. But, you know, they didn't reach on a contract extension. So you can be as complimentary as you want. They set a number and they walked away from it when Lowry's camp didn't come down to it. So Lowry's future is still up in the air this summer as a restricted free agent, regardless of how complimentary Arturis has been of him. So I've said this before, he's not Krause-like, but he reminds me a little bit more of Jerry in the sense that he talks for a long time, but he doesn't give you, you know, maybe as much to work with or as much transparency as maybe John Paxson did, who, as we all know, kind of wears hard on his sleeve and was almost too honest sometimes for an executive. So it's an interesting transition from one to the other to the other.
You know, I can't believe I'm going to ask this question, but it's been asked all over the place. We've actually talked about it. Are they better without Markkanen? Is Zach LaVine better without Markkanen? Do they mesh? We haven't seen enough of that happen when they both played.
It's a fair question, Mully. Joe Colley asked it of Billy Donovan recently. So it's out there. It's on the beat writers' minds for sure. What I will say is this: I would agree with your assessment in general of Zach and Lowry sometimes struggling to form some chemistry together. I do think that was changing this year in the 14 games that they played together. I thought Lowry and Zach found ways to be impactful together. Part of that is just obviously the way that Billy Donovan is structuring his offensive system. Part of that is Zach's, you know, recognition to be a little bit more of a decision maker and distributor at times. Zach is not as assist dependent as Lowry is. Lowry is a pretty assist dependent scorer. And so I think Zach recognized that. And I do think they started to show some potential for chemistry this season. But it's a, I mean, the record is the record since Lowry's been out. So it's certainly something you have to think about. And I'm sure it's something AK considers when he's determining value and Lowry's, you know, future moving forward.
Casey, I thought it was interesting, too, that AK talks so much about being around the team. And even when Wendell Carter joked earlier in the day about how hands-on he was at all the practices. And maybe that's because of the Tier 1 protocols and some of the things dealing with COVID. But the relationship building is a big part of what he has always said would be, you know, maybe the best part about his job. And in that context, how do you think that it will inform what to do with Thaddeus Young? Thaddeus Young goes on to social media yesterday and kind of with the ESPN poll about executives thinking he'll be moved to make an impact or he would be the most likely veteran to make an impact. He says he likes it in Chicago. We know that he does. Do relationships matter to the point where they will factor into the trade thinking if he gets a deal that is best for the Bulls' future? Or how do you see that unfolding?
Fantastic question. I alluded to it in my column that you mentioned before on our website. And, you know, what I would say is this. We all know how executives have to balance the short and the long term, right? And Arturis definitely seems to me, in the limited time that I've spent with him, someone that understands that and understands big picture. However, he, I think, more than most executives, and I agree to your point that Tier 1 has kind of made this a different season, so the executives have to be around more. However, I jumped on the Nuggets postgame call last night and talked to both Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic about Arturis and the way they raved about their relationship with him while he was in Denver speaks volumes about that very component you raise. And so, yes, it's a business. Yes, if they offer, if some team offers an incredible deal for Thad Young, you need to put away the emotion. However, I think if it's a close call, you can certainly speculate that he could lean towards that other direction because he talks about how this needs to be a player-friendly organization. He talks about empowering players. He talks about the investment he makes in relationships. He talked about it pregame with us about when he was asked about his time in Denver. He said, of course they're still family to me because of all the time I invested in relationships. Thad Young's impact in that locker room, I said this to you guys last time I was on with you, is immeasurable. And it's widespread. It goes to Patrick Williams as a rookie who's in locker he's right next to. It goes to Wendell Carter Jr. on how to work the short role and the 3-on-2 situation. It goes to Zach LaVine, who was they were on the same teams, obviously, when Zach was a rookie back in Minnesota. It is widespread. So trading Thad Young would have a huge impact in the locker room. Would they get over it? Of course. It's pro sports. They're men. It's a business. They get it. But it would have a significant impact in that locker room. So I think that that's a very fair point to raise and one that kind of aligns with AK's team building philosophy.
After asking you about Markkanen and Zach LaVine, I got to ask you now about Coby White and Zach LaVine. Do you see, you know, that was one of the big issues before the season began, Casey. Could that be a backcourt? And we, you know, it was interesting to hear him talk about how few games we've seen with Coby as the point guard and trying to figure out because everybody wants them to go out and trade for a point guard. And obviously, you know, you got Alonzo Ball being mentioned all over the place with the Bulls. Would you think it would be wiser to wait until you don't have to give anything up to take a look at a guy like that if indeed you wanted to? What do you think of Coby developing as a point guard? Is that working? Is it not working? It seems like when Sato comes in and Kobe's shooting more, that works for him too.
Yeah, Molly, I would say I think it's working for the context that this season is being placed in, which is one of evaluation and one of just trying to establish their imprint on this organization. So I think, you know, I think it's fine. I think it's fine that you're kind of seeing what he can do as a point guard and what he can't. I've said many times, I don't think he's a true point guard. You don't necessarily maybe need a true point guard in today's NBA. But if you watch the way Chris Paul, and I know I'm bringing up a Hall of Famer here, but if you watch the way Chris Paul organizes a team, as you did with Phoenix, you see the impact that at least one who leans more towards the true point guard thinking plays on it, has on a team. And in that sense, I do think this roster would be it would help this roster if you were able to add a player, not of Chris Paul's caliber, because that's the pie in the sky, but just someone who is more of a facilitator and organizer. But I agree with you that giving up an asset for that right now might not be the way to go when you have that opportunity in the offseason. And I'm fine with kind of living through Kobe's growing pains in the interim, especially because he has shown progress at times. And Arturis obviously is consistent with Billy Donovan in bringing up what you said, how few games he's played at that position. So there is room for growth there. There's opportunity for him to play off ball at times with Sato and Zach LaVine kind of handling that role. So for what they're trying to accomplish this season, it's fine. I don't think he's the long-term answer there at point guard. And I think they probably know that. And, you know, Arturis is a heck of a lot smarter than me when it comes to basketball. So I'm assuming he's going to address that at some point.
KC, okay, so I know that Joel Embiid is a unique player. He gets 50. Jokic, same deal. I mean, he's one of the best big men, hardest to guard in the league, 39 last night. I understand why the Bulls didn't double him at times. Maybe it's too dangerous. He's too good of a passer. But at some point, did you think that Wendell Carter Jr.'s defensive presence would be more obvious against guys like this? Is that an unfair comment and an unfair question to ask? Because these guys have done what they wanted, and I know they're rare, but still they have done exactly what they wanted to do and been impossible to stop.
Well, and you bring up Wendell Carter Jr.'s impact or presence, and he was on the bench to close the game again, too.
I mean,
you know, Billy Donovan keeps closing with Thad Young, which he says he's doing for offensive reasons. And look, I've said, you know, Thad Young to me is the second best player on the team right now. So I'm not being critical of Billy Donovan when I say that. I'm just raising the point that you're making is that, you know, if this is your center of the future, how undersized is he against those elite players? Where is he at the end of games? Yeah, these are all fair questions. You know, Billy fielded a question about, you know, Wendell being an undersized guy post-game. And he kind of acknowledged it while also dancing around a little bit and being respectful, which is kind of Billy's MO. But it's an issue. And, you know, I've said before, written in mailbags on our website, I personally don't think Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. both will be on this team in 2 years. I could be wrong. That's just my gut feeling. I used to think that pairing would fit better before. I'll be the first to admit I've kind of flipped my thinking on that, just given what I've seen to this point. I've always said that Wendell's undersized, but because of his defensive instincts and his mastery of the art of verticality and his long reach, that he's okay. But you're seeing against the elite bigs over and over. And you can even drop it from elite and go to guys like Andre Drummond. He's always struggled with size. And those are good players. You know, they beat a lot of teams. But I'm just starting to – I've seen enough of it that it's starting to raise questions to me about the long-term fit of Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr.
Great stuff, KC. Great seeing you. Great catching up. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, KC.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. See you next time.
All right. That's our buddy KC Johnson with NBC Sports Chicago. We're going to bring in Patrick Mooney next. We'll talk to Mr. Cubs from The Athletic. We'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
This is 670 The Score, Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station, period. Thanks for keeping us on top, Chicago. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
I know for me, I rely on, you know, soft contact. I rely on balls in play. So those guys behind me making plays like that, it's awesome to see right out of the gate. You know, see Riz turning double, Javi turning double plays like that. A couple of great plays in the outfield. Jock running one down for me. So yeah, that's our bread and butter. That's what we have to rely on, especially with a lot of guys in our rotation that are going to be pitching to contact.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to The Score. We're delighted to welcome in Patrick Mooney. He with The Athletic, and you heard the voice there of Kyle Hendricks. Always good to hear from Kyle, and always good to see good defense, which we saw in the Cubs opener. Patrick, delighted to welcome you to the program and the Score Hotline presented by Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apford.com. Good morning, Patrick.
Hi, Patrick.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
I loved your story today where you're talking about Jed Hoyer, and we remember Jed Hoyer coming from San Diego. And he remembers that the payroll was $38.5 million in 2010 and $40.5 million in 2011, as you point out. And now you look at that franchise, and they have been out getting everyone, and they've been throwing out the big money contracts, and they're spending money like a sailor on shore leave while the rest of baseball is trying to pinch their pennies.
Yeah, it was definitely a bizarro baseball world this off season, and yeah, like of all teams, the Padres, right? I mean, it was this place where, you know, it was known for Tony Gwynn, Mr. Padre. It's where Theo kind of learned the game, the scouting side, working alongside Kevin Towers. You know, players like Anthony Rizzo would kind of get there and you know, go somewhere else. They had, you know, a lot of turnover at the top of the organization. You have the Dodgers up the highway, this kind of monster team. And, yeah, it was just weird. I think the Cubs have kind of recovered somewhat from that real low point of dealing Darvish just before the new year, but it was just kind of strange to see the team with the brown jerseys with the ones with the target on their back.
Yeah, and big picture wise, Patrick, I think you wrote last week about a really good question, is if you had to pick the team, you know, that is going to invest $784 million on three infielders, it's not the Cubs, it's the Padres, and they did that in Hosmer and Machado, and the latest deal for Fernando Tatis Jr. And with the Cubs, kind of the uncertainty surrounding Rizzo, Bryant, and Baez, you articulated well, I thought, you know, why the differences between the two approaches and why the Cubs have been there. And so how would you, in summary, I guess, explain that? Why it is the Padres investing that kind of money in their infield while the Cubs are still kind of waiting to make those kinds of investments?
Well, I mean, you guys know how it works when we're on the ground here in Arizona. You're trying to, you know, think of stories, and it's kind of easy to just throw out the team that, you know, air quotes, won the offseason. And, you know, I think it's important that the Padres actually have to see this through, because A.J. Preller showed up in San Diego and everyone thought he won the offseason. I think it was after the 2014 season, and then they've just been buried in the NL West until last year's, you know, game playoff appearance. And, you know, I think, you know, the Cubs over time here, you know, have certainly, you know, created a chance to do some of these things that the Padres have done. And it's not like the Padres have spent more than the Cubs over the last, say, 5 years. And I think it's just, you know, on the one hand, you have, you know, a group of Cubs players who were kind of top of the draft talents, you know, who kind of made some money, you know, right away just by signing. Some of these extensions come down to, you know, who your agent is. And there are certain agencies that are more inclined to kind of, you know, jump at those deals. I think it's important to remember that Anthony Rizzo has been extended before, and that, you know, no one's kind of closing the door on the possibility of, you know, someone like Javi or Rizzo signing an extension here. And I do think Chris Bryant is sincere when he says that, you know, he loves playing for the Cubs. He's given no indications that, you know, he wants to leave or is at all unhappy with the Cubs. I think it's just kind of the circumstances of, you know, all the moves the Cubs have made kind of going all in during this competitive cycle. And then obviously we can't ignore what's happened with this pandemic and, you know, how it's really upended the business model at Wrigley Field.
Yeah. I think we all understand that, but I was absolutely stunned to read in your story that Daniel Descalso was the last guy, the last position player hitter to get a 2-year deal. And that was in 2018. I mean, there's, you know, and I look at the White Sox and they go in for 1 year with Lance Lynn. It's not, you know, I don't think it's unusual that we're seeing kind of 1-year deals going on, but I think it is unusual that we look at the Cubs and see the limited number or the majority of so-called core players really just on the verge of being done. And, you know, so much of the talk this preseason has been about this kind of weird picking apart of the psyche. You know, what's it like for you? Are you enjoying the game? Are you still having fun knowing that money's out there? It's crazy when you think about this market, that team, and frankly, how many players are kind of coming up at once.
Yeah, and I mean, no one sat down in that media interview room and, you know, logged onto the Zoom and was like, you know, yeah, I don't like it here. Like, I can't wait to go somewhere else. Like, they all say they want to be here, and there are lots of good reasons for that. And, you know, there is certainly a chance that it can come back. And I think sometimes we underestimate how hard it is to get to the big leagues and play in Chicago. It's not like all of a sudden there's going to be this external pressure on these guys. I mean, it's from the moment Chris Bryant was drafted, he was viewed as a franchise savior and has conducted himself extremely well every single day during his tenure here. So, I mean, it will be fascinating to watch. And I think the Cubs, this wasn't like the secret strategy all along, but I do think they believe in this kind of walkier bounce that guys are going to be extra motivated. And, you know, Jed wasn't the guy in charge, but the only other time that he's been a part of a group like this with so many free agents coming due was the 2004 Red Sox.
Patrick, okay, so what was your even-keeled analysis of Javi Baez grasping for answers to explain his decline last year? Because we heard a lot of things offered, and he was kind of all over the place, and it just sounded to me like a guy that was searching for answers and reaching a little bit and maybe seeing some things that weren't there. And I don't know if that would made any Cubs fans more or less confident about what to expect from Javi in 2021.
I think part of it is just the nature of these Zoom conferences. I mean, you guys know, how it is, how it used to be when we were able to kind of work locker rooms and talk to guys in a little more relaxed setting, a little more back and forth, not this kind of, yelling into a computer screen. And I think part of the nature of the all over the place was, you just get kind of questions on this topic, on that topic, you know, and it kind of all blends together. And I think, you know, there were a lot of different factors that went into it. I think Javi and most of the Cubs are, you know, kind of sick of talking about last year. Whether or not the in-game video is a huge deal ultimately on the field, Javi thinks it really, really helps. It's an important part of his team, of his routine. Obviously, we've all seen him in front of 40,000 fans at Wrigley Field. That's a huge deal for him. He feeds off that energy. And, you know, I thought Cubs hitting coach Anthony Iaposi made a good point of, you know, a guy with, you know, 7 years of experience in the big leagues, a World Series champion, a guy with, you know, top of the draft talent. You know, if he has two bad months, like, do you hold that against him for the rest of his life? And, you know, I think Javi is someone who over the years really does get better in the second half. He kind of pays attention to the details. He likes getting into the rhythm of the season. So I think it's not totally I get why you can read all the quotes and the tweets and the sound bites and be like, you know, what's going on here? But I think there's legitimate reasons to expect a big bounce back from him this year.
You know, I know that David Ross told you that he's optimistic about the possibility of fans returning to Wrigley Field. What's your take? I mean, are we talking about eventually? Are we talking about, I mean, you know, it's so weird to see these games and to see people actually in the stands. We just haven't seen it in so long. And I love it, and I really want to go to a game this summer. When will I get that chance? Could it be the spring?
Well, that's up to noted score caller Lori Lightfoot, but I think she has, you know, City Hall has the final say, but all indications are is that will happen. We don't know the final details yet, And I think certainly in a situation like this that has been so fluid over the last 12 months now, but you see the, you know, being outdoors is a big deal. You know, the Cubs themselves, you know, went through last season without a player testing positive. You can see things relaxing down here. I mean, just the fact that, you know, a small group of us are able to sit down with Jed Hoyer, you know, whatever, 6, 8, 10 feet apart and conduct an interview that wasn't over text message or Zoom or the phone, is a big deal. And, you know, if they're doing it at Sloan Park, it's not unreasonable to think that they'll do it in Chicago. And, you know, Ross isn't saying this is very encouraging without, you know, kind of being in the loop on that. And frankly, the Cubs wouldn't have signed all those guys to one-year deals without kind of a growing confidence that there would be fans in Wrigley Field. I think that was a clear sign when Jed, you know, was going to ownership in the business side that, you know, whatever they were seeing was encouraging to get fans back in Wrigley Field. How many is that opening day? I'm not sure yet, but, you know, everything we're hearing is fans are going to be back at Wrigley Field this season.
Patrick, thanks a ton. Great stuff. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Patrick. Take care.
Anytime, guys. You too.
That's Patrick Mooney from The Athletic. We're going to bring in Lamont Pope next, and we'll talk a little, I don't know, White Sox, maybe? We'll shift gears a little bit and go to the other side of town.
Equal time.
Yeah, that's what we're all about. We're just about sharing, and everyone gets satisfied, all customers satisfied. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
Coming up today at noon, it's the Lawrence Holmes Show.
How can the Bears get him? Like, that's what I want to know. Now let's forget about Russell for a sec. Explain to me how the Bears get this done. And I'm still trying to figure out, what do you offer Seattle? Here's this 20th pick. Yay! Where all of the quarterbacks that you might want are probably gone?
It's got to be Lawrence Holmes, live from Chicago. Noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. A radio.com sports station.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.